This art hobby, it's April 4th, 2008. I'm here in the education building continuing my conversation with Hank Loeffler, and we're sort of using this session to tie up some loose ends. So, as they say, knots to you, Hank. I need to tie them up.
Well, I was never a very good knot tier as a scout. I don't know.
Yeah.
There were a few more issues here, and obviously I'm sending a lot of my correspondence over to archives, and people can puzzle for themselves what was going on with some of the day-to-day issues in the chancellor's office during the 8 years that I was there. I was in some ways sort of a pack rat, and I kept logs, and I kept a daily log of what I was doing and what promises people were making to me and what issues were coming in. I think it shows the difference between the lofty ideals of America's public universities and what actually people work on when they're in a chancellor's office. One might wish that we were sitting around with lofty thoughts and thinking about the future of undergraduate curriculum or something important like that. And in fact, we're worried about whether or not babysitters really made the trip to the Rose Bowl in 1999. Did the athletic department really bring babysitters on as a member of their official party? And how are we going to handle news releases that said that they did, and stories in newspapers that said that they did? I'm just thinking contextually that for people who are really interested in these kinds of stories, in addition to the regular university records, I'm going to be shipping off the stuff that I kept that I thought was kind of illuminating the issues, and angry letters that we've received, perhaps, and so forth. One of the other things, as we kind of wind things up, I was thinking about some of the athletic issues, and I think it's probably worth talking about those. Sweatshops and protests and things like that. This David Ward's era as chancellor was marked by occupations and sit-ins of his outer office and our outer office, and students coming and pounding on the walls and windows and asking for various actions related to international politics and working conditions in third world countries and varieties of other issues. What really characterizes the athletic issues, and I suppose to a certain degree to the characterizes the issues of university's hospital and medical school complex. A part of what's going on during this period when Ward was chancellor really was how do we handle large enterprise operations like athletics, which sit off on a distant part of the campus, and they seem to be a castle, perilous off in the distance somewhere, and how can we get a handle on the issues like the babysitters or other issues that came up. And sitting off on another end of campus are a couple of city-states. The medical complex is off in the West Campus, and they are the hospital is there, and thousands of, at that time, university employees and lots of research enterprises were underway. And how do we make sense out of the combined programs that are the medical school, or now public health and medicine, and nursing and pharmacy? How do you bring some coherence to that enterprise, which has very large members like the medical school and the physicians and the various corporate and foundation structures that they create, and how do you protect programs like the occupational therapy, physical therapy, the smaller programs, the physician's assistant program that are within those units, but which tend to disappear as you look at this large enterprise. And this was a period of time when David was chancellor where it seemed like we were in our third or fourth iteration. Do we have a School of Allied Health? Do we combine the school? I think we constructed and deconstructed the School of Allied Health several times over the last 25 years and moved programs. I've seen alumni of the physical therapy program come to the School of Education Alumni Weekend program and say, are we supposed to be here? Because their program had moved to become an independent school and college for a while and called Allied Health, and then that was broken up again and it was divided between the medical school and the School of Education again had had occupational therapy but not physical therapy. Eventually, those alumni became so confused that they stopped coming to events. They didn't know where to go. They didn't fit in anywhere. And I think that that's, with both athletics and with the health units, I think trying to figure out how you can manage units about which you actually know very little, because we're really talking about David Ward, a chancellor, who is sitting in Bascom Hall, and it's very hard to get reliable information on what the issues are in the medical school, in the medical complex, and in the hospital generally. At one point with the health sciences issues, Chancellor Ward, in essence, appointed himself the vice chancellor for health sciences to indicate that he was in charge of that operation. We had gone back and forth between appointing somebody out there as the vice chancellor for health sciences, the dean of the medical school, for example, or not. And I think there was always a lack of coherent information where the chancellor would be buffeted by various departments within the medical school that were disagreeing with the way the medical school was being run, and there seemed to be no end of issues that related to compensation of physicians and unhappy departments which thought that they weren't getting a share of the family practice plan revenues, and it became very difficult to try to figure out how to run such a large operation, or to be responsible for such a large operation, when in fact you weren't getting good information. I think at that period of time, Sybil Better, who was working in the med school, was one of the sources of information that the chancellor relied on to try to figure out what should be the approaches that we would be taking on some of these issues.
How did the dean of the medical school feel about his moving in this way?
Well, I think...
Well, ostensibly he had the title of vice chancellor.
I think this was a period of time when we replaced the dean of the medical school at one point. And so that was clearly an appointment that didn't work out. This was also a period of time where we started to negotiate, and this is a project that Wayne McGowan worked on with David Ward. The very complex negotiations with Blue Cross Blue Shield over the dissolution of the Blues in Wisconsin and the ultimate transfer of a very large endowment to the university, to the medical complex, with certain strings attached, but basically an enormous growth in the endowment of the medical school. And at the same time all of that is going on, the whole question of the privatization of the hospital, where it became necessary for varieties of reasons to convince the governor, the legislature, the regents, and a whole variety of major political players that we shouldn't be running our own hospital, not to mention unions and employees, that we shouldn't be running our own hospital, that it ought to become a corporate entity. And so we're now talking about the creation of UCARE and separate, the hospital and clinics as separate entities.
Where statutory entity, is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah. And they sort of vanish from the university phone book because they're not a university employees. Of course, we solved that problem by not having a phone book anymore. You can go online and try to find phone numbers. But the world of health and health politics was a a rather key issue at this time, ultimately culminating in the big ceremony over at the Medical College of Wisconsin, where the announcement was made that MCOW and Wisconsin were going to be the beneficiaries of the settlement of the Blues operation, which has, I think, in many ways, worked out very well. It, without all of the things that we were concerned about at the time, were would our hospital remain competitive? Could we, as we were making this corporate change to make it competitive and to keep it competitive, of course at the time no one knew that it was going to be as productive as it has turned out to be.
Was this a 50-50 share, or did MCOW get less or more than we?
I don't remember the exact division of the assets. I know that they were the two beneficiaries because they were the two medical schools in Wisconsin. Yeah. And I think, I don't remember the exact division, but I do know that it resulted at all around us, hospitals that were university, major university medical centers were falling on hard times, and that never happened to us. So I think that sort of right decisions were made here, and if you go to the West Campus today, the castles that are being built out there are, if anything, even higher and more numerous than they were back during the 1990s and on the early part of the next century. So I think that worked out very well. Much closer to Bascom Hall was the independent empire of the athletic department at Camp Randall Stadium. And I think in some ways what we're now starting to describe is the transition of the UW-Madison from an entity which would be in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s much smaller. And we're now starting to come in with the ever-increasing importance of earned income and other sources of revenue than state revenue, and we're beginning to see the growth of management systems in Bascom to try to continue to operate enterprises which are now enterprises rather than just faculty-dominated governance units.
Well, now it's what one would have to say UW Athletics Inc. It has its own sort of corporate structure almost.
Well, it certainly has its own corporate structure, and it has its own logos, and it has its own commercial identity.
Yeah.
The period of time when David Ward was chancellor, now that we've got some distance on it, and it's 5 or 6 or 8 years later, you can kind of look back and see how some of those issues turned out. What was going on during the period of with athletics, at least while we were there, really was a sort of a hybrid between what we have today and what we had much earlier. There was a constant effort during the period to get control over athletics, and again, this relates to what we were just talking about with the health sciences. How do you get some information from that unit such that you understand what the main challenges are that are confronting that? How have you structured it so that you don't pick up the newspaper and read about babysitters going to the Rose Bowl or these other sorts of surprises? How do you establish an auditing structure that as these units are increasingly responsible for raising their own revenues, how do you do it in a way that the basic state statutes are complied with, university regulations are complied with, and then, but at the same time, how too do you do it with a recognition that these enterprises are actually within a major academic institution? And the bigger that these corporate, quasi-corporate groups get, the more tempting it is for them to forget the basic connection to the undergraduate education system and to the university itself. The other side of the coin is how do we bring in sufficiently talented people so that they can continue to earn income in ways that are plausible and comport with what you would want a business operation within a university to be like. And so you've got this constant tension in many ways, old-fashioned athletic administrators focused on the athletic side of the house and were not particularly entrepreneurial and were not particular, and when they were entrepreneurial, they tended to be ham-fisted and they weren't necessarily thinking about how the actions would be regarded within the rest of the university. And so you're in a period of time here with athletic directors and staffs where you're trying to get a hold of the operation and not be continually surprised. The issues that athletics confronted kind of fall out across a spectrum of issues that range from Title IX issues, women's athletic issues, questions of gender parity, on the one hand, issues that are related to what can we do or not do, what kinds of corporate connections can we have. No, you may not have an official athletic department beer. No, you may not have athletic department coffins with Bucky Badger on the outside. Yes, coaches can, under certain circumstances, have red cars given to them by a local Buick agency or something like that. No, you cannot have just flat-out commercial advertising on a university website like athletics. No, you can't do that. Yes, you can have a friends and booster group that can do exactly the same thing that I just said you can't do, but you have to be able to do it under the aegis of a Blue Line Club or something else like that. No, you can or can't have beer in the basement of the hockey arena during hockey games or between the periods of hockey games. You're constantly threading your way through and trying to make these sorts of decisions. And I think if you went back through the log of all of the different issues that we were talking about in biweekly staff meetings, you would continue to see these athletic issues popping up. Did somebody really make off with 100,000 t-shirts? Why in the world was anybody expecting that it would cost us just what the Big Ten gave us when we went to the Rose Bowl in the year 2000? Why would anybody believe that that would ever happen? Everybody said, well, we lost money on the Rose Bowl. Well, of course, you made millions on the Rose Bowl because the newspapers just neglected to count any of the revenues that you got from the t-shirts and the sideline apparel and the authentics that were produced for those Rose Bowl games, which were, people go crazy when you go to a Rose Bowl and you can make a fortune just on the t-shirts and caps and things like that that are associated with those appearances. And then of course there's the question, how much of the proceeds from all of these things come back? Half of all of the Rose Bowl apparel, half of all athletic apparel, half of the profits go to the general scholarship fund of the university. They don't go to athletics at all. The other half go to athletics. That's an arrangement which was enforced during the period of time that we were there, and I'm sure continues today. It's also the same sort of question as where do the proceeds go from the Big Ten television account. And the early indication from all of the press releases associated with having charging cable users to watch Big Ten sports on a Big Ten channel, all of those early press releases said that half of the proceeds coming into the university from the Big Ten channels for all of our athletes and their appearances on that channel would go to the general scholarship fund. So again, Wisconsin has this sort of connection between the profits, if you will, from athletics and the general scholarship side of the house, the general university as distinct from the athletic university. And those are the kinds of arrangements that carry on.
Did you have a principal contact over there for conveying information back and forth, or were
at the time
several people involved?
Several people were involved. At the time that we were doing athletics, Melanie Newby, who was at that time the Vice Chancellor for Legal Affairs, was also the Chancellor's designee as his representative to athletics. It turned out that Melanie was at her best when we were doing Title IX or other legal issues, and that her heart was not in the general administration of a large athletic program. John Torfey, who at that time was the Vice Chancellor for Financial Affairs, and I think probably would get everybody's vote as the sharpest person in Bascom, at least during the time of that he was there, was a very shrewd administrator, and he began to develop connections with the chief business officer of the athletic program. And I think ultimately Jamie Pollard was extremely effective in that role and grew in that role at the time that David Ward was there. He's since gone on to Iowa to run his own athletic program. But one of the changes that was made along the way here was that the chief business officer for athletics would report to John Torfey, would report to the vice chancellor for administration. So that really locked up the books, so to speak, and was a way to make sure that there were no misadventures with regard to athletics. From time to time, athletics is a very large program, and you've got all of these minor sports as well as the major sports, and you've got booster groups for all of these. You've got NCAA rules overlaying the whole thing, and there is just, I guess it would be sort of a loosely held confederacy of various groups and units that are affiliated with athletics that run it, not the least of which is the UW Foundation, raising money and banking money and keeping money for athletics on the one hand, and then various clubs that are affiliated with but are not officially a part of the university dedicating revenues. Gazillions of booster groups at the Kohl Center and the stadium all selling brats on Saturday at football games and selling food at basketball games. And certain relationships between all of those community groups and the athletic department. And where do the proceeds flow and what percent goes to here and there? And what's the relationship between athletics and the union, if any, and food service? And all of these various interesting issues come up, and they're always having to be resolved. And I think a part of that, a part of the overall management in the chancellor's office that grew exponentially during this period of time was the realization, again, as I was saying at the beginning, that these enterprises had become, were rapidly growing, and were because the athletic revenues coming in were rapidly growing, and the importance of that revenue to athletics was increasing, and big time sports with TV contracts, if you will, are now beginning to drive the size of the program, and all of a sudden you've got athletics with 100, you know, well, with their own money, yeah. and virtually no state funds whatsoever, you know, just a pittance, buying their own buildings, sometimes selling corporate suites and boxes and things like that, and all of a sudden, in a relatively short period of time, you go from 25,000 people sitting around in Camp Randall watching football games on a weekend and the band plays at the end and everybody goes home to let's go play a football game in Las Vegas at the start of the season, let's go to Hawaii, the stadium is completely full, the revenue picture has changed completely, you are now supporting an entire major university athletic program with big time sports and just a few sports. And it has become a very big business. And I think a part of what we dealt with all throughout the time I was there was occasional coaches or clubs or individuals who went astray and did things they shouldn't have done, and then trying to figure out, you know, how to respond to those issues, some of which made the press and some of which didn't, and how to kind of keep track of this. It's the same set of issues that are going on at the research park. Here all of a sudden, what appears to be Just a small little operation on Madison's west side out in what used to be one of the university farms has all of a sudden become a place of employment for 5,000 people. And we're now into the third or fourth phase, and I think we own land out past Mesomany for the next, for the research park that we're going to need in another 35 years. And so how you begin to anticipate this, instead of going off to the meeting of the geography faculty, let's say, which a chancellor might have done 30 or 40 years ago, chancellors are now going to board of directors meetings at research parks and hospitals, and they're on, they're off flying around the country going to University of Wisconsin Foundation winter programs, and there are a whole variety of region corporations, some of which are public and some of which are not public. Wharf has become an enormous operation, and with and how to continue to manage those funds. All of a sudden, the place has changed, and I guess as we now sit around wondering who's going to succeed John Weiling as chancellor of the university, I guess what we're really talking about here is the changing job description of the chancellor, which I saw occur during the period of time that I was in the chancellor's office. God, by the time we were done with it all and we'd celebrated the sesquicentennial, basically we were flying around the state with the chancellor going to speaking engagements and meeting with alumni groups, and here somebody who was really schooled in the intricacies of faculty governance is now essentially being a corporate manager, surrounding himself with people with various interesting backgrounds in order to try to manage the place, with a dean of the graduate school now becoming a major domo of research as opposed to the quiet, sleepy little position that it might have been earlier on. Corporate legal is doing all sorts of different things that it never imagined that it was doing. So now as you kind of look at a new chancellor, Art, what do we wind up with? Do we have somebody who's really good with alumni? Do we have somebody who's really good at managing big enterprises?
Yes.
How do you change the structure of Bascom in such a way that you construct a team where if the chancellor doesn't have skills in this area, you're going to have them somewhere? And the place, in even with all of the games that we played in keeping people off of central payrolls, hiding their appointments somewhere else, and all of these kinds of ways of making it seem like we're still just a plain old University of Wisconsin-Madison, just like we always were, you need to be creating these virtual structures like elsewhere, or you have to put them in Bascom because the chancellor is going to need that kind of staffing from somewhere to run the university.
Plus the skills of making them all work together too.
You have to get everybody on board, and one of the things that still stuns me as I sit here in the School of Education now worrying about a new art building and some other things that seem much more pastoral as issues than babysitters going to the Rose Bowl, people still in general in the university have no sense of how complicated it has become. There's not a shared realization, I don't think. If anything, people have become more naive about the way the place is structured. So that also presents a challenge. I'm not saying that very smart people at universities, if they took the time and had the inclination, neither of which they're likely to have or do, could understand how the university is now structured. It's just that circumstances never force them to see the whole thing. And so then, here you are as the chancellor, and everybody sitting around your table thinks that what they're doing is much more important, or is the university, if you will. The regents are ever getting, drifting further and further away from an understanding of this kind of structure. It's just much harder for them with the geographic representatives coming in from around the state and various experiences of their own. The regents being appointed by the governor are no longer a microcosm of what you would want as a board of directors. Some of them are, but not all of them. I mean, so you have a board of directors that is out of whack with the complexities of the place. You've got system to understand as well. So how do you keep track of all of these castles that now exist across the campus? How do you protect undergraduate programs? Those are the kinds of issues that the liberal arts, humanities, the arts. So it's very interesting because I think that there is a disconnect between the staff structure of the place and
the realities
of the place. And I think certainly there's a disconnect between the old-fashioned organization of the Board of Regents and the traditional structure that we read in those lovely red volumes of the university's history and where we are today. And I don't know how you... I don't know whether Wisconsin is just a state which is slow to confront these realities, or whether every other Big Ten campus is sort of in the same place. I think certainly they're all feeling the same pressures. Are they responding to it better? I don't know. On the other hand, what I've been describing, I think, throughout our interviews, is a campus, the Madison campus, which has been just continued to be remarkably successful in recruiting students, in getting grants, and in doing basic research in knowledge creation. And the chancellors that we've had over the last 25 years, the Shalala Ward Wiley team, have really been shrewd enough to figure out ways to get us through. We really haven't fallen off the cliff, and to the contrary, we have become, without any question, one of the great public universities in America. So while I'm sitting here pissing and moaning because we don't have a very good structure, we've become the most successful of all. So maybe you become successful by not having such a structure. I don't know. And maybe we've just been, maybe our structure and its sort of ad hoc nature, but at the same time one which seems to be working in so many areas, and maybe that's the way we're going to just continue to operate. And maybe universities are really best when they aren't overly managed, but are managed with sufficient shrewdness, and people with great talent are given their heads, which is really the story of the last 25 years on this campus.
That's a good place to quit.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is due to people like yourself, too, who have dedicated their lives and careers to the institution. And I think this is what's always heartening about contacting people over the campus and seeing how they believe in the institution and respond accordingly. So Thank you for all those years and for what you've said on these tapes. I'm sure they'll be very valuable in the future.